transition team for the mergers. I am Chip Sapanich. I'm co-chair of this committee and also co-chair of the care council.
Andrew Lopez, co-chair of this committee and of the AP.
Jen Kust, council staff.
I'm Eric Sutter, planning council member.
Ken Pierce, council member.
Wade Morris, council member.
I'm Jack Bowen from Shakti and HPC
Council.
Hi, I'm a HIV Prevention Planning Council member.
Cole Harkin, HIV Prevention Planning Council member and Delayed Innovation Worker.
Dean Goodwin, HIV Health Services.
Some of our council member.
Tracy Allen, council member.
Mark Molnar, care council staff.
Thank you, everybody. We also have some announcements. So we have a very super packed agenda. So if Chip or I cut you off at any point, just keep in mind it's just for the sake of keeping time and moving things along. With the presenters, we'll be keeping very strict time as well, so they'll have 10 minutes for the presentation and then 10 minutes questions and answer. We're going to keep being strict with those as well. For HIV Health Services Planning Council co-chairs, just remember you guys share a vote. So we have scoring sheets, so if you guys can work together on the scoring sheets to kind of put a unified front on those. We also have some slight changes to the agenda. We would like to.
We approve the agenda. Number two. Well, while we move on to number two, are there any amendments to the agenda?
So we would like to. We'd like to propose basically shaving off 30 minutes from our consultant discussion, moving that to the end of the meeting, so that way we can do questions and answers at the end of the meeting. While we would like to ask. Mark and his staff, if they can tally up the scorecards during the interim, so that way when we come back towards the end of the meeting, we have the scorecards all tallied, and then we can kind of move forward with the discussion instead of right after the consultants talk. So that'll basically move everything up a half hour, and then leave the discussion for the consultants from 6:25 to the end of the meeting.
Okay. So, are there any other amendments or changes to the agenda?
Can I just say I have to leave here early at 6:15.
Any other amendments to the agenda? Okay. Any objections to approving the agenda as amended? Seeing none, it passes. Let's review the minutes from our last meeting. Give you a couple minutes. Are there any changes to the minutes? No? Okay. Any objections to approving the minutes as written? Seeing none, it is approved. Announcements. Yes. Any other announcements? Yes.
I just got a text that David Gonzalez is running late. He's caught up in something at work, but he will be here.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, let's move on to public comment. None. Okay. Let's begin the interviews. We're going to pass around these score sheets. But I would advise you to listen to the whole interview and the questions before you score, so it has time to kind of sink in and digest. So take, I don't want to do this, hand them all at once. Or, I guess we'll just do each, I'll hand them up for each.
Yeah,
oh, I thought you
mentioned
that.
Just a
question.
If we're not on a transition team, we don't score, right?
Right. The voting is only by transition team members. And if you're a co-chair for a subcommittee of the care council, the two co-chairs get one vote. You need more?
Are we just taking one?
Just one.
Yeah. And then we'll have them collected at the end of each presentation. We'll hand out a new one.
Be sure to fill out the top.
And then these are questions that we'll be asking each consultant at the end for answering questions and answers.
And then if there's time allowed, we can ask additional questions. All right. First up is Carter.
So it's nice to see some familiar faces and also some new ones. I'll start just by saying my co-presenter here is actually also missing from this meeting for the reason that some of your colleagues are. She's at Michael Baxter's memorial service as well. But I will introduce you to her in a minute, for those of you who don't know Michelle McGee. I know we are trying to be really efficient with time, so we put together a few slides that start out talking about who Harder & Company is, who Michelle and I are, but I really want to start to get as quickly as possible to sort of how we're going to work together and to what our approach would be about. So can I have the next slide? So Harder & Company Community Research, I know some of you are familiar with us. We were founded here in San Francisco in 1986. Some of our earliest work was in the HIV/AIDS field, and has continued to be so for a long time. We like to stand in the center of working with public agencies, nonprofits, foundations, community organizations, and our core services include these kinds of planning processes, organizational development, evaluation, community input, needs assessment. So we have a lot of tools in our tool chest in terms of how to gather, use information, and help groups make decisions together. As I mentioned, we have a long history of working in this field, including working with both councils and with SFDPH in other ways. And we have deep experience supporting integration and collaboration efforts. So I mentioned Michelle McGee, myself, and Amy. Actually, I don't think I said hi. I'm Richard Bezina. For those of you who don't know me. So we're proposing a team-based approach. Michelle and I would be co-facilitators. Michelle would be a lead facilitator with my support. And Michelle has been working in San Francisco for the last 30 years in a variety of settings, including Harder & Company for the last about 15 years. She's the president of our company. I'm not going to detail too much of our specific experience. You can see some of that in what we sent in terms of a written submission. Just want to say again that between three of us have worked with both councils, have worked with DPH in a variety of settings, and I think really understand what community engagement and community decision-making processes look like, and have, I think, a pretty strong working idea of some of the wants, needs, and interests that the two councils and the public health department are thinking about. So next slide, please. So these are general principles about how we work with you. I'm actually going to just really read them off and then move to the next slide because I go a little bit more into depth about how we try to apply these to this approach, hopefully. So just to mention that some of the principles that guide our work, particularly in planning-type processes, are inclusion, transparency, collaboration, integration of diverse perspectives, and a results orientation. And so the way we apply those, okay, next slide, really around two things. So the first thing that I want to emphasize to you in terms of our approach to what we consider effective facilitation is promoting transparency, inclusion, and trust. We use a variety of tools or processes to do that. These include documenting a process design and defining roles, building a shared framework of understanding for what we're doing together and what we're trying to achieve, defining clear decision-making rules, and building sustainable agreements. You know, all of these tools are in service of creating common ground, which is particularly important when you're bringing two or more different groups with different interests together. I want to go back to that last point about sustainable agreements. One of the things that we've learned, one of our approaches, is there's a facilitation model by Sam Kainer, who might be familiar to some of you, that really talks about the gradients of agreement, and that when a group like this is trying to develop something new and is sort of struggling through making a particularly challenging decision, if a group gets stuck, what doesn't need to happen is the whole question comes off the table. Our approach, using something that's called sort of the gradient of agreement, is really about finding the piece that you can come to an agreement on, pulling that off, working with that, pulling the next piece off, so that maybe you get there over time and in pieces rather than in one big lump. So the other part that I want to emphasize in terms of our approach is identify and document similarities and differences. Again, we have a few ways of doing that. So we want to make sure to review the function, structure, and roles of this group and the people in it. We think it's important to address concerns and or confusion with specific solutions. I think sometimes processes like this get stuck on people expressing concerns or confusion or frustration and having those affirmed but not getting a solution to them. And so part of our process is actually to have an explicit lens of making sure there is space to express reservations or challenges, but to keep the process moving towards a solution to those. Co-designing a process that encourages sharing of knowledge and articulating fundamental values and beliefs to define group culture. And I want to stop for a second to talk about how we're thinking of group culture and culture in general. The way we articulate that is that it's a fundamental set of values and beliefs shared by the members of a group that guide their behavior and their choices. So in a group that works effectively together, the members of that group are able to articulate the elements of that culture and are able to articulate the values together, and then they're able to use those to make decisions together and actually take action. And you need both of those pieces in order to move forward effectively. So proposed scope of work. What we outline in our proposal is six steps. I really see them working together in sort of three clusters. So there's steps one and two, which is really about how we begin with this group. So we would meet with the Joint Committee co-chairs at launch, and during that launch, we would want to make sure we define clear goals and objectives for the process that we would be asked to do. Review progress to date and identify issues that the new process must address. Michelle and I have done our research. We hopefully feel connected to this community, and we know that there have been past efforts, there's been some progress, there's been some challenges. We want to really get as quick an understanding as possible about where we are being asked to focus our energy, and then agree on the details of a scope of work. And then we would meet in an ongoing way just to sort of make sure the process is moving along as expected.
We have like 1 minute.
Okay.
And a half left.
I'm going to move to the next slide. Mm-hmm. So this is the key of what we're going to do here. So I just want to point out that during the facilitation process, a lot of what we're focused on is identifying common ground, affirming and managing divergent perspectives. Some of you may be familiar, another sort of group model is divergent to convergent. So surfacing things where we do diverge and figuring out a way to work together, and then providing necessary follow-up. And I think probably just about the last thing I'll get to say if we move to the next slide is that the last two steps are about producing a final written plan and preparing, supporting this group to report back to the two councils. The thing that I want to emphasize here is that the key to this is making sure that we actually, again, it goes back to sort of documentation and inclusivity, is to actually use this as a process to affirm the shared culture that this group builds together and document an actual clear course of action moving ahead. So I think after this, I just have a visual that shows the timeline, which is also in your documents. I don't think there's anything particularly surprising here. Most of the work is really ongoing. And then the last slide is just to say thank you and what questions do you have?
Okay. Andrew's going to ask some questions first.
Sure.
So describe your experience facilitating large, diverse groups come from different historic cultures and divergent responsibilities and roles to find common ground and reach decisions.
Great. Okay. So the project that comes to mind is actually not a project that I worked on minimally, but that was actually led by Michelle. So we actually, Harder & Company, led by Michelle, just led the process. I guess that was actually last year. It feels like it was last week. To support the integration of homeless health services here in San Francisco. So that actually involved bringing different sets of service providers together to integrate how services are going to be provided. There were divergent perspectives on how services should be provided. There were sort of divergent cultural norms about how clients were engaged, how decisions were made within that organization. I think that's really reflective of how of sort of a recent project. I think sort of throughout the work that we've done, even with both councils sort of represented through this group, some of what we've had to do is really facilitate decisions not as extensive an integration as this, but to facilitate sort of the evolution of both councils at different points in time. So I'll stop there since I'm sure there's more questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
So the next one, discuss a plan or process for working with the community to develop, prioritize, sequence, and develop timelines for the project. So see that you already kind of have one there.
Yeah, repeat the question. Sorry.
Discuss your plan or process for working with the community to develop or prioritize the development of a timeline for the project.
Sure. So, we outlined a timeline in that slide. I will say, we've built some assumptions into this work. We think that processes like these are complex, and so when we received the letter of sort of request for us to submit, we saw an 8 to 10 month timeline outline. We think it's going to be 10 months, just to be totally frank. I think these kind of things, it sounds like a lot of work has been done so far. I think part of our timeline would include a gear-up phase when we could get oriented pretty quickly. And during that gear-up phase, we would rely on whatever if it's the full group or some subgroup that you choose to help us sort of decide how to confirm that our proposed timeline is accurate. We also think that there's the possibility that, sort of what we've identified as sort of what was outlined in the original request in terms of facilitating the regular meetings. Often with processes like these, you have the occasion arises where you need to do breakout groups to focus on some sub-component of either rules, values, goals, and so we also see the potential that sort of in that middle space of the 10-month process, when we are facilitating the regular meetings, then we're also potentially supporting breakout groups that meet outside of those regularly scheduled sessions. And we obviously follow the group's lead on what those should be.
Andrew, can we ask her to put the last slide back up? Just because I barely saw it. It was up there for like 2 seconds. Only answers the rest of the questions.
Sure. And so why don't I just point out, so we see the finalizing the process design, these early steps happening, based on our understanding of what was already outlined to us in April and May. Supporting sort of ongoing facilitation here. This lovely lighter purple. And one of the things I skipped over is sort of gathering and reviewing documentation. We think there's a really crucial step at the beginning to sort of immerse ourselves. I know that this group and potentially others have actually gathered a lot already in terms of other models, best practices. So we think there's a sort of a piece of that in the startup phase, but then we also think that as questions arise or needs arise, we just sort of anticipate sort of a low-level potential sort of ongoing need to identify new resources to bring back to the group. And then the wrap-up would just sort of happen sort of as planned.
So I think the next question kind of ties into exactly what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. So describe your experience to effectively summarize large amounts of detailed information and kind of bring it back to the committee.
Yeah, that's a lot of what we have to do all the time. And so I think, part of our job is to immerse ourselves in a lot of information and pull it out. So, there are a few ways we do that. So maybe I'll start with the actual deliverables and work our way back. very often what we have to do is we have to present information in multiple ways. You know, in a group process like this, where people are coming from different backgrounds, with different interests, people are looking for different pieces of the information. So we're able to do things like summary briefs, PowerPoint presentations, infographics, sort of depending on what the question is. If it's a, you know, a question of epidemiological data, we would present it one way. If it's a question of, you know, organizing, guidelines that other councils have used to do, you know, to sort of set their rules and goals, then we might present it as a handout. So I think the key is really to make sure that we're matching the actual presentation of information to the content. And then in terms of how we get there, Michelle and I and Amy are all really seasoned consultants, both in planning and research. We have a lot of experience doing, really big literature reviews, really fast sort of, quick dives. And so I think we are very comfortable working with quantitative data, qualitative data, historical documents. We can pretty move pretty easily among those.
Last one from our sheet here. Describe experience working with HIV/AIDS communities and or other groups who are consumers of health services.
Sure. So I'll start with myself. I've been working in this field for the last 15 plus years. In the early aughts, which is still an uncomfortable word to use, feels awkward. I started my career as a case manager in a Ryan White Title IV clinic back when we had titles. I was in Philadelphia, I was also on the CPG, the community planning group there. Since then, I've wound my way through care, prevention, and research in the HIV and AIDS field. I've worked at the Center for AIDS Prevention Studies here, doing evaluation of medical training programs for HIV care. I have been a consultant to the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, been a consultant to the HIV Wellness Center. I've staffed the HPPC meetings for about 2 years. Michelle's work has been more on health services and care over time. She was one of the facilitators about 10 years ago of a similar process in San Mateo County. She has worked in health services in general for a really long time, including working prior to Harden & Company at a number of organizations serving youth. She's on the board of the Third Street Youth Clinic and was the deputy director of Huckleberry Youth for a long time here in San Francisco. So I think, and then I'll just say Amy has actually also done a lot in this field. I think among the three of us, we have a lot of depth and breadth of experience in this field and understand that there are a lot of diverse interests and needs within it.
So I think we have time for maybe one or two questions, if anybody else has something.
You said that you and your partner met a challenge. How did you resolve that challenge? What was the challenge in blood? How did you resolve it?
What challenge did I identify?
In your presentation, you said you guys met a challenge and then you went on to the next thing. Sorry.
Oh, gosh. I don't actually recall. So you're talking about my partner, Michelle. I don't recall what I was talking about.
I think you're talking about the technique of taking a piece of the challenge and making it the part by the
mom. Oh, gosh. Let me think of a good example. I'm drawing a bit of blank right now, but maybe I can expand it with a bit of a hypothetical. So I think sometimes groups, as they're trying to establish new rules and structure, can get stuck on some piece of decision making. So, for example, in this setting, we're talking about bringing the overlapping but distinct needs of HIV care and HIV prevention. And as we all know, those have been converging both by policy and change the epidemic over a long time, but there are still different needs, particularly in San Francisco, where I think there's always been a very strong community voice. So part of the need here, it sounds like, is the need to streamline and centralize some decisions without losing a diverse representation of points of view. I can imagine, getting stuck on how do we make a decision, what are our rules going to be for deciding funding allocations? What is the responsibility of this group to, weigh in? what we find is that we could start, if that feels really challenging to the group, well, we can start with where we have that common ground. You know, what are the parts that we find agreement on first and work our way in? I'm trying, as I'm talking, to also think of a specific example, and it's not, one isn't coming to the fore, but hopefully that's a little helpful.
Thank you. And if I'm off base and asking, I'm not real sure where the limits of what we are allowed to ask and not ask. But Richard, I know we had a budget,
mm-hmm.
and your budget came in about 40% over our budget.
Mm-hmm.
And when I compared, and I know there's you really shouldn't do it this way, but when I compared your hours, they're 1.5 to 2 times the amount of hours that any of the other proposals came in at. And I then look at how you do that, like just the facilitation. You have all three of you with 40-plus hours each.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit? You obviously
yeah.
decided not to reduce.
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked. So Dean followed up with us to say that we had the opportunity to do that. And I actually chose not to revise. Michelle and I chose not to revise the proposal. And I forgot that I actually was going to try to include that toward the end, sort of the rationale behind that. So, you know, we've looked at some of the tasks, and I think there are some of the startup tasks where we could actually identify some cost savings. So, you know, we heard the budget identified as about $35,000, and our budget came in around $49,000 and change. So we're talking about $14,000 difference or so. And when we looked at some of the cost savings, we said, you know, we're going to bet that we could find, you know, probably about $4,000 to $6,000 in savings, especially around things like gathering and reviewing documents. You know, we budgeted for sort of, I think, safely there so that there would be room over time. And we could just make some choices about what we're going to look at, what we're not, and, you know, and do that with this group. But when we did that, we actually looked at all of the hours we set aside. And when we looked at the facilitation piece, you know, like I said, we actually feel really strongly that in a process like this, there are left turns and right turns and unexpected developments. And so what we budgeted for when we did our hours allocation was an expectation that there would be the standard meetings that were actually described to us, as well as things that this group doesn't know are going to happen yet. That's been the case when we've worked with both councils in the past. That was the case when we worked with the homeless healthcare integration. That's been the case a lot of times when we're talking about community decision-making and bringing lots of different people to try to come to agreement around what can be tough choices. So when we did that, we said, you know, okay, so we actually think we can find some cost savings. We actually think we probably budgeted a little too conservatively for that core part. And that's our rationale for, you know, sort of why we actually just decided not to show the cut, because we actually think that could easily become absorbed by the unexpected.
Thank you.
Sure.
Well,
thank you all. Do you have any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much.
Sure. Okay, so go ahead and rate. Fill out your rating sheets. It's going, guys.
Question. And, is that on a scale of 1 to 10?
1 to 10. 10 being
ten
the
being
house.
The best. And then pass them to Mark, towards Mark, when you're done. Pass them towards Mark.
What's your name at the top as well?
That's Oscar.
He doesn't care.
Is there anyone else?
So we have them.
Okay. I just want to know if they wanted to project, because all they gave me were just basically the same thing as the handout. I didn't know if they wanted that in the back.
Under review, or do we put both our initials or not?
Yeah, go ahead. It doesn't matter.
Unless
somebody
just jumps in.
Yeah.
Oh, let me give you your zip drive real quick.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I just need clarification, process, comment, clarification. So if we ask somebody to budget, you know, their consultancy service for $36,000, and they come back with a 50 grand proposal, you know, is that not like you're, are you not just de facto out because you didn't meet the requirements of the initial proposal? Even though they sounded like that was really good, it was over the budget. Like, you know, if I write an essay and it says it has to be 2,000 words, and my essay's awesome, but it's 4,000 words, I'm out. So I'm just asking a process.
Dean will talk about that.
Clarify. So we, when we sent out the request for project descriptions, we called out what we were looking for. We didn't put a budget amount in there because it's kind of a fluid number.
Sure.
We were, we started off the year, we plugged in 30, we could go up to 35. And we can have a discussion on that. When we decided to that there were only three and that we were going to send all three to this committee, we gave them further directions and asked them that they were all over the budget to some extent, what we actually did, and that we were thinking of about the type of time that they had to go through it.
Okay.
But they didn't write the one.
And Mark?
Mark and then.
Dean, is there usually on a scoring guide such as this a place where you could actually score based on the feasibility and rationale behind budgeting? Because there's nowhere that you could actually express that. Scorers can express what they think about the budget, can they?
No,
that was
going to
be my question. Was I think we can reflect the budget question in under number two, even though that should have been a check off when the proposals came in. I mean, I've sat on a couple of review RFP panels, and you automatically go, do they have all the qualifications? Yes. Did they meet the budget? No. Did they provide certain documents? No.
So last week when we had more time, there were 10 questions, and there was one on that. But knowing that we were going to constrict, and that we'd already sort of done an initial review of that, we picked four. So you should kind of, you know,
I mean, yes, it just seems like under two we get it. Because obviously they didn't develop an appropriate timeline or a process around this if they're over budget.
Well, I think also just to point out, he did say that there was areas for cost savings that they'll identify through the process, but as they continue to work with us to identify what areas they can actually cost save, because they're kind of padding their numbers because they're expecting things to come up. So I think their budget's also a little fluid. And, you know, as Dean said, initially when we asked for the proposals, we didn't put a clear guideline for the budget. And so when we first got them, they were really kind of all over the place. And then we gave them basically 24 hours to kind of review their proposals and resubmit. So I think that may be kind of partially part of the reason as well.
I need to cut off discussion about this. We really need to move forward.
I think it's fair because we were part of it and the rest of you weren't. There were massive discrepancies. One of the budgets came in well over 100,000. The dollar amounts for the consultant costs were 3 times 1 of 1. So, and when we went back, most of them cut some of the, massively cut the hours. They didn't change the dollars. So all those things have to be taken into consideration. And the others, when they sent it back, they didn't do any change to their process. They just did a change to their hours. So it's similar. I'm just trying to be fair to everybody in this.
And who's on the phone, by the way?
No one.
Yeah, it would be a presenter who,
big brother.
So if everyone can finish their scoring sheets and hand them down towards Mark, and then I think we're going to go grab the next presenter.
We'll be passing out new score sheets as well for the next proposal.
No revising of the score sheets.
Dean, are you going to grab presenters? Who's going to grab the next presenter?
That's why I asked you guys if
you
want to do that.
Oh, I got it.
I can go.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I really like that.
We're ready?
Yes.
This.
Okay. I'll ask you to have the.
She has a jump track.
The next proposal will be the pilot group.
Why is changes last? There'll be.
Yeah.
Has everyone finished their score guides? Great.
Questions about budget now are appropriate?
I think any question is appropriate.
Yes. Right. We're going to be asking the same standard questions, the same score sheet questions to each group, but then any other questions that any of you want to ask?
Ken has an LOA, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, I guess as far as votes go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Just get the duck and drag us out. We're fine with that. Okay, we're done now. We had a contract with Placer County to do a course today, and she had 30 people who were coming in, and we couldn't get that rescheduled. So she would love to have been here. She is available by phone. If there's something that comes up that you guys want to ask her, we can call her. So we'll let you decide if that's something that's necessary. And I'm going to turn things over to Gail and Ellis, who will be one of our lead facilitators on this project if you decide to go with us. So you can see her style, and she can tell you a little bit about how we do what we do.
And given that there's only 20 minutes, we really wanted to make sure that we were answering the questions that you all have. So we passed around what might have been some slides, but we didn't want to take the time to do a formal presentation, but you can get kind of a sense of where we're coming from, why we do this work, because it matters. And again, I'm going to be channeling Lurie a little bit. But also you'll get to see kind of my style, and Marie and I and Beth have been working together for about a year on a number of projects. Mostly they bring me in to do facilitation and training because my style matches that of the Kylie group. And a lot of why we do what we do is, of course, to achieve outcomes, expected outcomes, but also a lot of our style really is about relationships and how to build relationships across diversity. So the proposal has the steps that we would take, so we're not going to take any time to walk you through all those steps, but it's pretty clear in there. And we always bring it back to what the purpose is and what the goals are that you have, and why this newly constituted merged group, what the purpose of that is, what the goals and the reason for the merge. So that's the focus that we'll always have. And of course, on for whom, which is going to be the community that the planning councils are most concerned about. So you can look through this, but mostly we wanted to welcome questions. We didn't want to take a lot of time on our presentation. My background is in group facilitation. I've got a master's in public health with an emphasis in health education. Tracy Packer's not here. She and I went through together about 25 years ago. And so a lot of what I do is facilitate community engagement processes across a lot of different kinds of stakeholders. And I've been trained in a number of methods. I've got a lot of training in adult learning and health education, but also in group facilitation methods that are highly engaging, hands-on, really where we generate results coming from group processes. But I'm going to leave it that general because we weren't sure exactly what you guys are looking for and what your questions are, so we wanted to both be available to answer those, so we thought we would just open it up to questions at this point.
Okay, Andrew, we'll ask you 4 questions to begin, and then we'll open it up.
Great.
So describe your experience in facilitating large, diverse groups who come from historically different cultures with divergent responsibilities and roles to find common ground and reach decisions.
I could give an example, and then if you could give an example from Marie's experience. I'm going to give you an example of a real recent process that I was involved in and led and designed, which was with a maternal and child adolescent health program for a health department. Every 5 years, they have to go through a community process to develop a 5-year strategic plan, and it starts with a community needs assessment. And so what we did there was we created a design team made up of their staff and some key stakeholders representing the different regions and diversity in the county, and designed the whole process, which was made up of looking at data, bringing data together, and then having different stakeholder groups throughout the county look at the data and analyze it through a process that we call discovery zones, where we help people look at data. We train people on how to look at it and what it means and what some of the limitations of the data are. And then we have them work in small groups using a focused conversation method, which takes people through a process of looking at it from objective, so what do you see, to reflective, how does this relate to your experience, to interpretive, what's the most important thing about this data, what meaning does it have to our community, and then decisional, what are some of the priorities that you think the department should be looking at. And so we went through, which is ORID, and it's a really powerful process where you can quickly get people to move from the objective to the decisional. And it's also really important, and this is something that I integrate into any kind of facilitation that I do, to take people through that kind of mental process instead of jumping right to, okay, here's the data, what should we do? It really helps both with the group process for people to be listening to each other and reflecting on what other members of the community are saying and what their perspectives and their own experience are before coming to decisions on how to move forward. So we did those processes all throughout the county, and then we took the results from those meetings and integrated them with the data that we collected from the state and came up with recommendations. So that's just one example. I don't know if you want to give...
I think we'll leave it at that just for time.
So next question. Discuss your plan or process for working with the committee to develop, prioritize, sequence, and develop a timeline for the project.
Do you want to...
So our process for that is... Our process with any project is always the first step is to meet with the people who are the key stakeholders, key informants, in this case probably this group, to talk about what are the outcomes that you want to achieve. And once we have a clear understanding of what the outcomes are, then we go back and create a more detailed scope of work about how we will approach this process, and we create timelines. we've done everything from using an online system for tracking outcomes and the project to less formal. It depends on the group and what their culture will really adhere to. If lots of folks in the group really aren't technologically savvy and don't want to be going online to look at when their next due date is or when their next meeting is, then we can go to a less informal system where we just maybe make emails and calls and stuff to follow up with things. So that would be our process. We really customize everything based on who the client is, who what the needs of the client are going to be to best get to the outcomes we need to get to.
So next one, describe your understanding and experience to understand and effectively summarize large amounts of detailed information and bring it back to it today.
I'll talk a little bit about that. That's really one of our sweet spots is gathering lots of data. We actually have our own proprietary software that does narrative analysis. And so we go through processes where we do survey monkeys, do meetings where we use post-it notes, which you've probably all done meetings similar like that. We take all that information back and come back with some sense making. It is the process of what are the themes that are coming out of this, and looking at not only what are the things that come out and there's lots and lots of data around this, so obviously everybody wants that. But what's the one idea that's on a post-it note that doesn't really fit in the theme? Maybe that's your breakout idea. So we really look at those things. We have a team of people who do analysis and on that data, and we come back with a report that lets you know what the themes were, what we see as the direction. And we double check that with you because, we are coming at this from a different perspective, and we need to know that what we're seeing in the data is what you're seeing in the data. And I think that there's a real value in having the insider information and the people from the outside coming in and looking at things with a fresh set of eyes and a curiosity to really look at it and say, why are we doing this? There's a scene in the movie Big with Tom Hanks where he goes in and he's on the board with the toy company, and he's just like, I don't get it. That's sort of what the perspective is that we bring, is that there's some things where it's like, I don't get it, explain it. There may be a very valid reason as to why this is coming up, but we always double check as the final step with the client.
So describe your experience working with HIV/AIDS communities or other groups who are consumers of health services.
Well, I can start a little bit with HIV and we can talk. My experience with HIV goes back to, I was just telling Beth when we were waiting for you guys, I was reflecting about living here in the early 80s when GRID first emerged, and I was involved with student health services at San Francisco State, so very engaged with the early days of the epidemic as an advocate, as a very close friends of many people who were affected by AIDS at the time, GRID, and then AIDS. So in my early career and early life, I was real involved as an advocate. I was part of Stop AIDS Quarantine down in L.A. I don't know if any of you remember that. ACT UP, a number of other organizations, and then more generally working for several different health departments over the years. Never directly in the HIV prevention or services side, but as a program manager in these health departments, working very closely with those departments.
And I'll mention two projects that are very similar, one actually for the Department of Public Health here in San Francisco and one for Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health, where we've been doing some planning events, focus groups around preparing for ACA and being ready for what are all the changes that come down, and we've had to work with multiple different stakeholder groups with those projects and involving lots of data and lots of focus groups. So we're very familiar with that. We also have worked in smaller counties, and one of the projects that we've been working on in the last year very closely was with the Mono County, and we were working on a project where all of the county departments were coming together to do a combined strategic plan. So we actually worked together not only to gather data from the stakeholders, but we also taught folks to be ambassadors and to go out and to do town halls for themselves, so that we are building capacity within the county to do the work on their own.
You guys have a lot of experience
in
behavioral health services and similar kinds of processes. MHSA, we both have worked a lot with Mental Health Services Act programs.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions. Laura?
In terms of your software analysis and information crunching and team of analysts and so on, that's not something that shows up in your budget in terms of the hours and staff and so on. How do you make all of that work given the limited budget that we have available for this project?
Well, it's incorporated a little bit in our discovery phase, which is... there's a small piece of that for that. The other thing that's important, and we on the first slide, is that we do this work because we care. And so part of when we received the budget for the project and we decided what we could cut, some of it is not necessarily cut. It's just that we're going to be putting it in pro bono because we care about the work that we're doing.
Thursday.
Yeah. Does anyone in your, or either of you or anyone in your organization, has have experience working specifically with the kind of community planning process that the HPPC and the HHSPC are involved in? I think not totally unlike other kinds of maybe community groups, but I think that there is something unique about this in particular, so I'm wondering if that's
Lorie could speak more specifically with her direct experience with this, and she's done lots of over the years because she's been at this for over 35 years doing these things. One thing that comes to mind is the Human Relations Council in LA. We did some work with them, probably the most similar, helping the group to figure out what direction they were moving in and how to work better together, which was a little bit interesting that the Human Relations Council wasn't getting along, but and I will throw in just that Lorie is also a master mediator, a trained mediator, and in past when we've done some combining of organizations, sometimes they've been hostile takeovers. You know, in our review of the minutes and the things that are going on with the planning councils, that does not seem to be the case in this situation. But if something arises, we do have the skill set to deal with what if there is something that needs to be mediated. So.
One last question, anybody?
So I see you guys are from Placerville. Is coming down here going to be an issue for you? I mean, on a regular basis?
Well, we don't do much work in Placerville. Basically, Lorie says you don't heal your own family. So we actually purposely don't do much work in our own home county. So most of our work is travel. We do come down on a regular basis for other things. We're working with Alameda County. So if we possibly can, we combine the travel opportunities. We also have lots of technology that we can do virtual meetings when that is appropriate. And, we'll only do that when that's necessary. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
before we go into the next one, I just wanted to point out there's no dinner break, but there is food there, so please help yourself.
Yes. Thank you, Mark.
One leap.
You're going to laugh in advance. Hope you're prepared.
Yes.
Take notes because I don't remember things. Like when we're discussing later, I'm like, I have no idea what I remember about.
Should I pull out the key points when I do a report back?
Yeah.
Quote, yeah. Sweet spot.
Then pass your forms up tomorrow?
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, can you total yours?
Oh, it's total amount.
Yeah, the bottom.
Total.
You guys are supposed to open it.
No, that's what we're doing.
Oh, I did it.
No.
I didn't say that
at the beginning.
It's true. It's the other one either. It's the other one.
Never should have done that on your remaining.
Apparently, I am not good at following you.
Sorry, you're not anywhere close to Mark, so you have to get up. Sorry.
My text this morning was a little upset.
I know, I wanted this but by the time I read it, today, it's all over.
We just decided it's safer for her to be
joining us by phone. So anyway, Wise Change, just a little bit about who we are. We're a coaching consulting firm, and primarily we support public systems, health departments, school districts, and philanthropy to really engage community stakeholders and also nonprofits, and to really what I call, you know, unite and really collectively solve those big wicked social problems that no one can do on their own as an individual or as a group. And so a little bit about who I am. Basically, before I started my own consulting firm, I worked for two different health departments, so Alameda County and Contra Costa County, and then also two federally qualified health centers, Asian Health Services and La Clinica de la Raza. And so that's collectively 20-something years of experience. And the common thread through all of that work has been about partnership, community capacity building, strategic planning, and fund development. Before I go on, James, you wanted to say a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm James Nguyen. I'm happy to be part of Wise Change team. My background the last 17 years includes also systems change building, development of relationships. And actually, just a plug, my very first experience was back in 2000 with the Stop AIDS Project, working with all the gay and bisexual organizations that were launching the first ever research-based campaign, media campaign, to look at homophobia within the Latino community. So this kind of brings it all back home, and this is quite a long time ago.
I have a slide that just visually shows you who Kim is. So Kim Fowler, Kim, do you want to just say a little bit about yourself?
excuse me, briefly. Yes, I am a coach and a trainer. I train for the International School Coaches Training Institute and also Leadership at Work, which is also an international school which focuses on social justice, nonprofit training. And I've done work in both the nonprofit, in the government, and a little bit in the corporate sector. And I have an individual client base in addition to my training, and have done work also with different health nonprofits, including Mission Neighborhood Health Center, Asian Pacific Islander Wellness, and Alameda County Public Health. And worked with the counties of Emory, of Emeryville, Oakland, Berkeley, and Richmond to come together to talk, to create a joint arts marketing project.
Thank you.
So a little bit of me.
Well, so I was just going to give a quick essence of us as a team, which is we're creative. We have a tendency to really bring about inspiration and dreams, and we're also on the ground. Not afraid of looking at legal documents, kind of combining things together, really like concrete detail oriented. So we're big picture, we're calm, yet also fluid. So I just wanted to give a quick kind of essence of the three of us. Can we move to the next slide?
So this slide, if you can't see your back, a lot of our background, Ben and I, are working across major systems. In the last 10 years, a lot of our coaching and systems building work involves bridging large systems like the county health department and also 18 school districts in Alameda County. One of the ways, and this is relevant, is that when you bring people who are serving or systems that are serving the same group of people or population, they bring very distinct sometimes orientations, organizational cultures. They may have very different funding mandates. And so bringing them into the same room and going, how are we supposed to serve the same students throughout our county can be challenging. One of the ways that we've learned in terms of the change management strategy to do this is to really, this is an example where it's a concept, and some of you in the school education world may know about it, but the school world will call it responsive intervention. In the health world, it might be coordinated health services. And I just want to highlight this because it's one way to look at when we work together, how do we organize all of the health resources or academic resources so that we can provide prevention, early intervention, and treatment services and scaffold those services to the population. And as most of you know, a lot of the public school challenges is really to look at, in Alameda County, how do we serve the most disenfranchised groups of students? Most of them are probably African-American, Latino, young men or boys of colors. So in our experience, what we do is we really work together to bring an executive team together, representing both systems. And through a process, one of the outcomes was with OUSD, Yvette really brokered the first ever five-year master agreement between the county health department and OUSD to organize a set of commitments around health supports for students. And that model's been replicated at least once in Hayward, and these things take a long time, lots of legalese. And also from my background working with school districts, I was involved in creating executive committees, and that includes the people personal services director of school districts, the folks who are in charge of organizing educational resources, and how do we bridge shared language with health leaders to really focus on some of these populations. So that's just a little example.
Okay. Next slide. Our approach, we can go to the next slide. This is, what we wanted to show was couple our approach with also what we know around change management. And the detour sign is kind of like, sometimes when you see change happening, you're just like, Eric! It's kind of like a detour. this is what we know about change theory, that this is the current approach, you're going through this, and then in order to actually get to the new approach, there's an edge that you have to cross. And we like to kiss people over the edge rather than push people over the edge. Next slide. Kurt Lewin, his continued change theory model looks at what are the forces for change and what are those forces against change. And it's only when you have the positive forces for change that are greater than the negative, the forces against change, that you actually have sustained change. Next slide. And so our approach is really a systems coaching approach. All three of us are all trained as system organizational systems coaches. And what we are attempting and trying to do is really to look at how do you create, with the two councils, a collective emotional intelligence. How do we really understand? It's only with understanding of the two councils that you can really look at collaboration. Next slide. And so what are some of the ground conditions for sustaining change? How do we kiss people over the edge? It's really by looking at how do we create a shared sense of purpose and urgency about the change, that everyone has an opportunity to provide input, and that we're also transparent, and that people understand how the decisions are going to be ultimately made. Next slide. What we try to do in Wise Change is that we really deeply believe in something called deep democracy. And that's a term that's been created by Arnold Mendel. He's a process-oriented psychologist. And deep democracy is really about creating opportunities where all voices can really be heard. And at the same time, why I wanted to bring up this slide is that some tenets around safety. Rita Schumann, she's a co-executive director of GLIDE, and also untraining, that everyone deserves to be safe. The amount of safety that we expect is dependent on the amount of privilege that we have, and the world is not a safe place. Next slide. Here are, Arnold Mendel has descriptions of 12 different types of privileges. Some of them are earned, some of them are unearned. And so what we really try to do is look at and combine that with nonviolent communication, which is that, I was going to use the example of James and myself, that James might think of me as the dominant position because I am the principal of Wise Change, and yet at the same time, I will see him in a subjugated position because I'm a woman, and that both of those are truths. And it's not to say that he is right or I am right, that we are actually both right. And so how do we really create with all of you a sense of acknowledging where there is, where there might be some unequalness around, or inequity around people feeling safe, but how do we really truly create that safe space? Next slide. Next slide. So in your packets, we had sent you our proposal of the phases that we wanted to design with the co-chairs and also services for the Department of Public Health, assessment and roadmap design, and that what we wanted was also to really focus on change management coaching and trust building between the two councils. And so I think we had allotted up to 16 hours of that coaching to ultimately create a vision statement and operating agreements. Our philosophy is that sometimes you actually have to go slow in order to go fast. And this is a time that I would say we're going slow to really build that trust. You can't say, hey, trust me. You actually have to build it together. And then once you have that, then the synthesis and integration of bylaws, policies and procedures, that will go much more quickly. So that is our
So I'm going to go ahead and go ask you four questions, and then we'll see if you can briefly answer them, and then if we still have some extra time, we'll open it up. Describe your experience in facilitating large diverse groups who come from historically different cultures and different responsibilities to find common ground and to reach key decisions.
Sure. So James and I were talking about in Alameda County, we did that throughout Alameda County, bridging not only school districts with the health department, but also juvenile justice, probation, just multi-sectors. I have also, through Wise Change, we've also worked with a city of Davis Police Department who were accused of racial profiling, and so engaging the community in, I would say, their hot topic of how do you really bridge that conversation. And so really combining restorative justice as well. So I feel like we're very comfortable with creating that safe space, talking with diverse communities together in the same room. And if I could just plug that, that's the reason why I became a systems coach, is because in the beginning, we would facilitate these meetings. People would nod. You know, diverse groups were nodding and saying, okay, yeah, we believe in it. Create the strategic plan, and then it would be put on the book, on the shelf, never to be used again. And that what they never dealt with was, you know what? Actually, historically, there were broken relationships in the room, and that even though we were agreeing to it in terms of trickle down theory, it was not going to work. And so, I think if you feel my passion, it's like the reason why I'm doing this work.
Next one. So discuss your plan or process for working with the committee to develop, prioritize, sequence, and develop a timeline for the project.
Sure. I think that the previous slide is that we're going to first start with an assessment. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And so we're going to start with an assessment questionnaire and look at what are the findings that we get from that and work very closely with the co-chairs and the staff from San Francisco Department of Public Health to create a roadmap to then come back to the transition team, I'm assuming. And I think this is where the nuances of who is who and where, what makes the most sense, we're going to really rely on this, the co-chairs and a small team to really help us be the internal navigators and help us with co-design. I mean, we have some ideas of sequencing. We've done this a lot. And the assessment process really helps us with determining, okay, you know what, there's a lot of, you know, this in the air. And so this helps us even with our coaching sessions. When should we do full session? Should we try to do something with the transition team first? You know, there's a lot of questions that I have, and until I know the fuller picture, that we would want to have those kind of conversations with a smaller team.
And I also want to add that all organizations have their own experience with these similar processes, so we just want to be sensitive to process fatigue, where these two councils are, and what they both may respond to positively. So we're very flexible in that way.
Right. I have a project with Napa County that just ended, and we worked with a small group of ambassadors, and it worked really well because part of it was, you know, we just didn't really have a full understanding of all of the different things that were going on in the Health and Human Services Department. And with the set of ambassadors, we were really able to move so much quicker because they were able to tell us, hey, you know what, this actually means this, you know, and there was a language and a terminology that we as outsiders might not have been familiar with. But then with the ambassadors, they were able to help us with decoding.
Describe your understanding or experience to understand and effectively summarize large amounts of detailed information and kind of bring it back to the committee.
Sure.
Do
you want to say anything or do you want me to start first?
I'll go ahead and start.
Okay. Well, so when I was working with juvenile justice, I would say that it was really bridging together language and terminology from a juvenile justice system with a mental health system. And as a person that was neither a mental health person, even though I have a master's in public health, it was about learning the two systems and then actually spinning it back out in layman's terms that actually both sides were able to say, oh, you know what, I didn't even know that. So I'm very comfortable, I myself am very comfortable with that kind of synthesis. I think I had said earlier in the presentation last week that I have, not trying to boast, but I have like a systems think kind of a mind, and so it's very easy for me to actually read information and actually look at where the common threads are. And when I was trained by the Grove on graphic facilitation, I think that was one of the things that they said about me, that it was very easy to, for me to actually create through lines, and that actually graphic facilitation helped me to articulate to others, like, oh, this is where you see the through line. So I'm very comfortable with that.
And I would just simply add, in both our experience, when you're working with the school district, they have their own body of language. It's a totally different foreign language. And when we spent years working at these executive committees to assess all of the health and academic support services in, let's say, San Leandro, the goal being a final action plan. So we spent a lot of time, and we have a lot of fluency in navigating different lands, that we call it, so that we can translate the information in a way that both groups or both systems can at least have common ground and shared understanding.
Yeah, and actually what I was going to say about James is that what he brings to us is really that communications expertise. J.P. Carter, I think when he was talking about why doesn't change really stick, one of the things that he talked about was that for change to really be sustained, you have to actually over-communicate change. And James, I think, is really great at really articulating things in a really simple way. Things that might be, you know, really detailed, but then like, hey, you know what? We just need to say it like this. You know, that's where I think James really brings a lot of expertise in that area.
All right, so we have one last question I think we'll have time for. So describe your experience working with HIV/AIDS communities or other groups who are consumers of health services.
Sure. I think James has the most experience working specifically with HIV populations.
I'll just speak briefly. So my background is a little bit, so I spent about 2.5-3 years working at the STOP-AIDS project, and part of my main project was working with Mission Neighborhood Health Center at the time, Proyecto Contracida por Vida, and there was incredible distrust of the STOP-AIDS project at that time, where these organizations felt like the STOP-AIDS project was able to secure larger amounts of federal funding, and why are they the lead for serving bisexual and gay Latino communities, or men specifically. And so my first job assignment was really to form a collaborative and start to break down years of institutional distrust so that we can actually work together on a pilot project. But more recently, we both have a lot of experience working in Alameda County with a whole network of federally qualified health centers. And Yvette really, in her tenure, expanded a model called School Health Centers. You have it here in San Francisco as well. And we grew that in the county from about several to now 26. And they all involve partnering with many diverse health providers, providing health education, mental health, HIV, STD treatment for adolescents. Add anything?
So yeah, I have a lot. We have, I think, a lot of experience working with diverse health specific issues. And then I would say personally, I went to visit my parents over the weekend, and my mom is, basically I grew up in a family that had you know, a parent that suffered from anxiety and depression, and as an immigrant, had to do a lot of the translation for my family. And so I think that that's kind of been, from a personal angle, really spurred my advocacy for, you know, people really having the right to services. Anyway.
I think we're out of time. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, can we ask a couple of questions? Because we've asked every other group a couple of questions.
We just want to stay on time and not have to have another extended meeting. But one question.
Sure. Okay. So I sort of see this merger process as sort of couples counseling. And the outcome of couples counseling is not always that couples stay together. Mm-hmm. What would happen if through this process you realized that we couldn't do that? And are you able to articulate that to us?
That's a great question. And I love your analogy. You know what? I think that this is where, at the start, it's really important about figuring out who are the decision makers. You know, we can actually facilitate the process, but we're not the decision makers. And what I can describe about systems coaching is that the system has intelligence. Like, we actually really believe in that kind of a viewpoint, that even when you just, you know, twirl your pen, that is actually the universe talking to us. You know, I mean, and that might seem like really too, you know, woo-woo, right? But that actually, that I think that in saying that the system has intelligence is that you all as a group are going to have to define how you're going to have to look. Now, that might not be, you know, what San Francisco Public Health Department, you know, wants, right? But I think that's part of us helping to clarify the process, like who are the decision makers? What are the benefits for having a joint collaborative? You know, how much more powerful can you be? And addressing what could be lost. You know, and so that what we can say is that we can stay true to the process and that we can coach you through what the fears are, what are the different stories. I have one last slide that's at the back. One more. It's not very clear, but one of the coaching tools that we can use is called the Epic Tale, which is a visual storytelling. And we've used it tons of times. I think I used it with the City of Davis Police. We used it with the ISMS Collaborative. But it's a way for people to really tell, so as two councils, two distinct councils who have a really rich history, how do you actually weave your story? And look at from here, you know, at the end, what does that next chapter look like? You know, and if there are decisions that are made that say, you know, as couples you aren't going to stay together, what are the implications of what that also means? You know, and that you guys actually are the ones who make that decision and not us.
And I would say we will absolutely let the both councils know if there's, if we're working towards a shared vision. Oftentimes in our work, if the vision is not clear and bought into, then there could be an outcome where two entities just don't see eye to eye and cannot see common ground. But it hasn't been from our experience. Even this, I'm not going to name, but a city in Alameda that has a long history of distrust with the county, we have continued to find a table where those representatives can get together and work on specific projects. There may still be differences in the agreement of the vision or how we go about it, but it all depends on what's the vision and what are we working on concretely, and could we find some commonality?
Right. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to say one last thing, which is in Alameda County, you know, I think there, James, I think, brought up some examples of people who really, or organizations that really felt like, you know what, we need to stay true to ourselves, you know, and because we were actually able to find common ground. When I started with the school health centers back then, we had a $1 million annual budget. We have a $27 million budget annually. And it was because outside foundations like Atlantic Philanthropies, social impact funds, like saw us and saying, you know what? It's incredible that you could work together and other agencies don't work as well together. And so we're going to fund you. And so I would say that the plug is that I really do have a dream around collectivism. You know, that there is like what we should explore what that could look like. You know?
Thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Tim, for joining us remotely.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Oh. We're up to agenda item number 7, the joint executive motion. There's actually...
Can I get one more?
Yeah, sure. There's actually 2 or 3 parts to this process. We need to discuss the composition of the committee, of the joint executive steering committee, and then the frequency that they will meet, and then we need to form a motion and vote on the motion. So I guess we'll... It's possible to make a motion at the get-go, but I would like to have a little conversation beforehand, just for general principles. I don't want to be focused on one motion when there's possibilities. So let's talk about the committee's composition and meeting frequency. What's on people's minds?
Composition of the next step?
We're talking the composition of the joint executive committee.
If we're talking about the executive committee and the steering committee of both council, on Model A, both council agree to having the steering committee and the executive committee joined together. And that's on Model A that we're looking at.
So, this actually isn't to this. I'm just curious why we jumped ahead. We still had 5 minutes on the agenda, and it would have been nice, I thought, to check in with anybody to see if anybody had any comments about the interview process.
We did that at the end. We changed the agenda, so that we'll do that.
Oh, yeah, you missed that.
So that we can take care of the motions.
And then that way, Mark's going to tally up things, so that way we have our little list.
And we'll hand back out the sheets so that you can see what
you got.
Others? I mean,
maybe it would be good, since I said how many people are currently on our executive, to know how many members are currently on your steering, so we can just...
Our steering is the 3 co-chairs, plus the co-chairs of each subcommittee, and there are 3 of them, and then also 2 at-large members.
So 11.
Yeah.
8.
But there's... Co-chairs.
4, 6, 7, 8, 9.
He's not noting the 2 co-chairs.
We have 2 co-chairs in each subcommittee.
Yeah.
That's 6.
Yeah.
So 6 plus 3 plus 2. Mm-hmm. And does your executive committee meet monthly? Just like ours? And how long do you meet for?
Hour and a half.
Okay. And we meet for 2.
I guess the question is it real important that we be exact same numbers? Yes.
Probably, yeah.
So I would propose, you know, we have 2 co-chairs for each of our subcommittees. We, and in the past, we can share that. Either one or the other of us go, and or one or the other of us vote, that be the case, which will bring it a little bit closer. Then we've got 8-5. Can you guys look to bringing in 3 at large or something, if that's important?
Well, we currently have 2 at large, but I think it's ambiguous enough that in the policies and procedures that we can add at large members as necessary.
Jack.
So I'm not totally sure we want a 16-person committee. So I guess I'm curious about whether we may want to settle on a number that we feel would be a comfortable number of people to be able to work together, and then it would be some from us and some from, it wouldn't be everybody from both sides. Otherwise, I mean, it just seems deeply unwieldy to have so many people working on a team.
Yeah,
I have Charles and then TJ.
Again, I'm going to go back to the agreement of both council that steering committee and executive committee must join, and the process of this committee is to vote on that because we adopted both model in committee. If you're going to disband that and you're going to, then you, we need to vote another session and he has to go back to the minister. I don't want that to happen. I want the steering committee and the executive committee to make all the decisions from here on because that's the way it was written.
Then TJ and then Ken.
So, actually, Jack, I would counter what you say because I think it's a perfect example of whether or not we can actually work together and we'll have success in the future. And if we can't do it with 16 people, we can't do it with 45. So.
So, I'm not sure I would go that direction, but what I would say is part of this is using systems we're comfortable with. And our executive or steering committee versus yours, I think it's easier for you to add a couple versus us having to go through and saying, all right, we've decided this committee participation shouldn't be there because we're trying to slim down to get the number they want. So if I might propose, do you understand what I'm saying?
Eric?
Thanks. Yeah, I think the other point that I advocate for with a larger representation from both councils is just that it also broadens the base of leadership and it allows more people to really get involved and have a stake in decision making.
And I think it goes to a cultural thing between the two councils. You guys have a very centralized leadership and we have a very broad sort of leadership through our committees and even through our steering committee. And so I see it as the first hurdle at whether we can work that out. John?
I think also too is as I look at the whole picture of who's on the steering committee and who's not on the steering committee, for both committees, the people who are on the steering committee are the ones who have been around for a while and the people that are elected there and chosen them because of their leadership abilities. So to me it's like if you keep where you're at with your executive branches, you're going to have that knowledge that needs to be there when we are transitioning and when we're moving forward, as opposed to having those who are maybe new on the committees and haven't been around for long on the council. I mean, so maybe me is like, I think people who are in leadership or who are on the steering committees and are here have been around for a while and know the ins and outs of what works and what doesn't. So then we need to really take a look at that, why those people are in the positions they're in.
Yeah, I agree with what Ken was saying. I think you guys, it says it's something that is part of your model, part of your core values, having that kind of representation. And it's easy for us to add a few votes just for parity on that. The voices in the room, I don't have a problem at all. I think we should definitely follow that with everybody else. We feel that we've got a nice cozy first step going.
Jack?
I'm not going to stand. Process, but I don't want to have it be inferred that not inviting everybody from all from both sides to make up a big group of 16 people implies that like some voices aren't important or that we're not interested in that I'm not interested in like a broad like representation of people. I think we can have a diverse mix of people from different perspectives represented in a group that is smaller than 16. That's what I'm putting out there. We can add three people. I think that in terms of like what John said, we would be adding three people that are not already part of our leadership team, so who have some experience being on the council, but don't necessarily have experience as being part of our executive committee. So that is something to take into consideration, I think. But still, I don't. Maybe six. I don't understand how we would ever get anything done. 16. And I don't think that's the same as having as the councils. It's a different working model.
I've chipped in then, Ken.
If we do decide to add from the prevention side some voices, the reason that we want everyone included from the care side is we want the consumer voice to be strong and heard. And I would really like it if the people you chose were consumers of services more than providers. so that we get the prevention side of the consumer needs.
I have Ken and then Eileen.
As someone who's been on both for some period of time, I will also notice I've never seen all 16 people show up anywhere. We can be very assured that we're going to have a smaller group.
Eileen?
One of the challenges, and I'll just put it out there, of having an additional 3 at-large members is that people are really busy. And the last couple elections, like, it was down to the wire where we had people step up that were able to take on additional time. And for 3 additional seats, that might be a challenge. In fact, I think it will be a challenge. I'm concerned about that.
Well, I don't know. I look around the table. I see a lot of very busy people.
I know. It's definitely not saying that this group isn't. So maybe it's like what more someone can take on their
I understand
plate.
What you're saying.
Teacher? So then if you guys can't recruit them, then that's what it is for you guys on your side. It seems pretty simple.
I was going to say as well.
Yeah.
If we don't get our mandate, we still will be. I don't think we need numerical parity to get voices personally. I'm just... Eight plus 8, it can be 8 of you and 6 of us.
And
I can personally other accents be another.
I'll let David go. Okay.
Yeah, so from my experience from the last year when we tried to do sort of some of the collaborative planning, really expecting the group to be a lot larger was a little challenging. Specifically when people did miss a meeting, then they showed up for a meeting and then we had a backtrack. So I know a lot of it has to do with facilitation and making sure we move forward. We had to backtrack, request board again, and we didn't really stick to sort of agenda. We didn't stick to sort of even this meeting itself. We added an extra meeting, even though we said it was how long it was supposed to be. So for me, it's more like if we are going to be sort of expanding this group, it's really about making sure we stick to the plan, stick to sort of what we're supposed to be doing, and we move forward. If someone misses, they want to catch up, there's notes. Another thing is I really want to make sure that we do have a voting parity moving forward. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we should do that. And I think by really speaking to sort of really making sure that there is qualified and really individual voice on sort of the planning body as well during transition. I know that we've onboarded some new folks. There's some folks that have had to drop off because of their own personal sort of like life, challenges, and so for us as well, being very cognizant of that, the only folks that have been very consistent are those who are providers. I myself am not a provider. I don't get funded by either one of these funding streams. So for me, it's very difficult to show up. And I show up for other community planning bodies as well. So if we're to move forward and we are to have a larger body, it really has to be streamlined. I want to be very, very, very respectful and very, very accommodating. At the same time, there is a set time limit and there is a set course that we have to take, and I want to make sure that we all really reflect that back to our respective councils. Because I understand that we all have these challenges, and I also know that we do drag things out, and I don't know how much longer we can drag things out at this point.
I think maybe it's the thing that's computer training is to be a group. I have one already get to the meetings. I didn't break down any. So it depends on the screening and how many. But the consumer base, how willing are they to show up? If you're dedicated to the cause, you can make the effort.
Ken?
I think this also addresses another issue down the road, because I don't know that we can always be assured we're going to have number parity. Just by virtue of the mandates that we have on who must be on board. So I think we're kind of boxing ourselves in if we try to do this. So
for sure. Mark?
It sounds like we're sort of getting towards something, building off what Ken said of 8 people from the HIV Health Services Planning Council, at least 5 up to 8 from the HIV Prevention Planning Council, and we'll work on 3. Those. I think that
you know, the goal is not to need number parity and not to have things that are being, where one council's representatives are being outvoted by the other council's representatives. I think if we get to that point, we do need to go back to the drawing board, because if we're, you know, like, the point is coming up with something that works for both sides. And so if there are things where there's a very clear vote between people representing one council and people representing the other council, that should be a red flag that we need to sort of step back and look a little deeper at what's going on and not rely on one council outvoting the other. So, but I feel like there's a motion based on what Ken said around 8 people from HIV Health Services Planning Council, at least 5 and potentially up to 8, with HPPC adding a few folks to that and then moving forward with that as the executive slash steering committee, which probably needs a new name as well.
Is that a motion?
Sure, yes, that's a motion. We don't want to take it away from Ken.
There'll be discussion after the motion is made.
So can we hear the motion again?
I think the key elements, I'll ask somebody else who's better words than me.
The motion is that we form a joint executive steering committee that consists of 8 representatives from the HIV Health Services Planning Council, the current steering committee, with 1 representative per committee, and up to 8 representatives from the HIV Prevention Planning Council, the current 5 executive committee, plus an additional 3 at-large.
One issue I think needs to be resolved.
First, we need a second.
Yeah. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Okay.
We're now going to cross the aisle and have Laura and Ken.
But in terms of what I said, was I think just so that it can't be an awkward layer, is that when we have one representative from our committees, that may be either one of these people.
Yeah,
yes.
No, I get your point. It's a little challenging because I think we do want to aim for consistency and representation continuity. Yes.
I think we have, is it the vote or is
no,
who's present?
Yeah.
Because
yeah, yeah.
Eric and I will both be there but have one vote.
Yeah.
So that's
right. And then what about proxies? Because we allow HIV positive people to have proxy.
We're going to have a discussion later about tasks and things like that.
I think that would be more.
We're really getting off the subject here because, I mean, there you have a motion on the floor, and then you also have an agreement with both councils that steering and executive join, and then move on from that, and whatever proxy, whatever thing it is on the table, they will decide. So we're going way out of the model, and if, I mean, you bring this back to the council, both councils can say no. The agreement was Model A, prevention agreed, that steering and executive join, form that group, and decide every issue there is on the book, on the table, put it on the front. The same thing with the care council. So that's the agreement. And if you're going to go back out from that agreement.
So Charles, I think we have to compromise a little bit, though. I mean, We are asking.
I'll compromise. What I'm saying to you is, then you're altering the agreement of both council.
But in the essence of it, Charles, is the reason we have 2 co-chairs is because rarely do we have more than 1 show up at our executive. So it's really not a major change for us to limit that to 3 versus 6. I have to give a little bit of this.
I was just, Charles, what do you feel like we're veering away from this? I feel like that's exactly what this process is merging into. Like that I made a motion to form a new joint executive steering committee.
But I'm hearing more than that. I'm hearing that there's joining the 2 council, but there's going to be only 1 vote. This is not the place to decide that 1 vote.
I think that Charles' perspective is coming from the idea that the model doesn't spell that out. I think it's as simple as that.
So as someone who is part of a
during the collaborative planning work group. I mean, I think there was a little bit of, you know, gray area of like, this is the model, yes, but it was up to the decision. We didn't spell everything out. We specifically didn't go into that detail, and I think that was a part of the issue when we came to vote in December, was that it wasn't that detailed, but it was because to allow some gray area for this, you know, the process to kind of work itself out. And I do think we are adhering to this as much as we can by forming the two committees, but we're also trying to include parity and representation from both sides and to have an equal voting body so that way we can move forward in a collaborative way. If there's 11 people on for care and 5 potentially for prevention, it just kind of seems like a railroad at that point, you know, like, and I don't want to see it that way. I want this to be a really collaborative process moving forward where everyone feels like their voices are heard and we're moving forward in a way where we can all say we're moving forward together.
TJ? But, you know, and I think the way it was presented to the HIV Health Services Planning Council was our full steering committee would be part of this. So, you know, we represent different groups of people. You know, we're very particular about how we pick our co-chairs so that we get sometimes provider and client co-chairs as best we can. And I just think it's a shrinking of voices, and it's not what we presented based on the collaborative work group to the planning council. So I would be hard pressed to vote for it because, you know, we're somehow superseding our power that we were given to come here.
Dean, then Chip, then John.
You know, guys, I hear what you're saying, but I think that overall the structure of the process was that we'd have a joint executive committee and that this transition team was sort of charged with deciding what that those details were to be and how often they're going to meet and how it's going to be made up and what their roles and their decisions and everything is supposed to be. And that's what we're doing here today and been doing the last few months. So it wasn't ever spelled out that it was going to be exactly the way it is now, that it would be a joint structure. And knowing how ours is different from theirs, we're trying to create some parity and some equality and represent voices. I mean, both of the committee co-chairs are going to be allowed to come in and speak, as are members of any council, or both councils that are part of the transition to the joint executive committee. But they'll need to deliberate and one vote in this proposed model. And I think that's the way. I think the chairs of the three committees are used to making decisions.